Good morning. Mike, we'll be discussing the upcoming trial of human rights attorney Stephen Donziger this morning. But first, let's touch on a few of the left in the law highlights in this grueling election season. We know that Trump lost, which is cause for celebration. But there are important local measures that passed that are pretty significant victories. Portlanders voted overwhelmingly for a new community police oversight system, and the majority of Oregonians voted for decriminalizing drug possession. So Mike, how would you assess these two successful measures as part of the larger movement for racial justice and criminal justice reform?
I think they're extraordinary, Jan, particularly the decriminalizing of small amounts of drugs, because that is the greatest effort toward racial justice that happened in this season or in a long time, because it's a striking huge number of police encounters with black and brown people involve small amounts of drugs. It's also used as an excuse for a lot of encounters that swell up into assault charges and multiply into all sorts of ugly facets. So that in and of itself will lessen the need for police too. The effects of that are already starting to reverberate around the country, and it's a demonstration of how far ahead the people are, ahead of politicians who grew up in an era when being tough on crime was maybe the only ticket to higher office. The idea that people don't want that is vividly expressed by these initiatives, but has yet to be really fully recognized by politicians.
With Measure 2617, the Police Oversight Commission, you know, there's a long history of various oversight or advisory community committees that have in many ways served to further put a veil over the depths of the problem. Is this any different from previous oversight or community advisory commissions or committees?
Well, it certainly has stronger language. It allows cops to be fired. It has a much greater reach. It gives more power in terms of investigation of just what happened in any single incident. It's much, much stronger. Having said all that, we'll see. It's a matter of practice. Really strong. It's well drafted. It's supported by 80% of the people, but the cops are resourceful and they've been accustomed to winning. It's been impossible to ever discipline anybody, ever fire anybody. This should make it happen, but we just need to watch it carefully. And the first couple or three times it is used will be pivotal in determining how effective it is in the long run.
In earlier segments on our Left in the Law, we've taken up the progressive prosecutors movement in cities around the country, and some of those were in primaries. Did the left win anything with the law this week on that front?
Well, we won phenomenally. I mean, the most stunning development was what happened in Los Angeles. Los Angeles has the biggest prosecutor's office in the whole wide world. They've got 1,100 deputy district attorneys. They have put 229 people on death row in Los Angeles, three quarters of them black or brown. And they just elected maybe the most progressive prosecutor in the whole country. He said he will not seek the death penalty. He will reevaluate every single death case. And if there are meritorious petitions for habeas corpus, he will settle them. He will work to get rid of the death penalty altogether. He's going to not charge people youths as adults. He's as progressive as Chesa Boudin in San Francisco, but he's got a grand jurisdiction. He's got millions of people that he's in charge of. With his leadership, it was just the most significant single development. The pioneer was Larry Krasner in Philadelphia. These are prosecutors who aren't just being nice and liberal. Krasner fired seven of his most militant deputy DAs who were always charging excessively with anybody from neighborhoods in Philadelphia they didn't like, or skin colors or cultures they didn't like. He just fired them. And Gascon may well do the same thing.
So these are signs of the successes of the Black Lives Matter movement, the movement for major criminal justice reform. And I think often these victories get overlooked in some of the discouraging areas of the picture around police budgets that still remain bloated.
It's the most dramatic example of the power and impact of the Black Lives Matter demonstrations and what happened in the wake of the murder of George Floyd. Because in the primary time, Jackie Lacey, a Black female prosecutor, was very close to winning an absolute majority. She had 49%, but she had never, ever prosecuted any policeman for killing some of the several hundred people who have been killed over the past decade by Los Angeles cops. She's been completely a tool, is not too strong, really, when it comes to the way she scrutinized or did not scrutinize the policeman. Now, in the primary, she won 49%. George Gascon won like 23%. And this other deputy DA, Rachel Rossi, won about 20%. But Jackie Lacey stomped them both, came within a hair of getting a majority. Then George Floyd happened. All the demonstrations happened. Huge demonstrations, often in Los Angeles, all around the country. And when the election time came, the top two vote getters in the primary, Jackie Lacey and George Gascon, went head to head. Gascon just trounced her, won by 10 to 12 percentage points, even though she had had twice the votes he had before. So that's really a quantitative demonstration of the power of all the Black Lives Matter demonstrations.
Yeah, and I think those victories, there's still a long, hard road ahead, but it is important to acknowledge these successes of the movement. Well, let's talk about the trial of human rights attorney Stephen Donziger that was scheduled to begin next week. It's been delayed till January. It's an ongoing, quite tragic and horrendous story of someone who's been a champion of human rights and fought Chevron on the behalf of Amazonian Ecuador and communities there. Tell us about that case from a legal standpoint. First, can you summarize the charges against him that seem quite bizarre, and then where he is in terms of the scheduled trial in Lower Manhattan this week that's been delayed?
Well, you know, corporate power is something that is usually masked. It is subtle and soft by use of influencers and subtle contributions and sometimes large financial contributions. But in this case, it's naked power, huge, even decisive worldwide issues are at stake. And Chevron believes, and I think they're right, that they're fighting literally for their life. Because what happened was Chevron bought Texaco. Texaco had been exploring for oil in the Amazon and had left behind them a toxic mess that filtered throughout huge areas of hitherto untouched rainforest and poisoned wells, damaged communities over a very wide area. Chevron was sued initially in New York, but they wanted to move it to Ecuador. They said the Ecuador system was fair, and they basically wanted to dodge a jury trial because there were no juries for these particular issues in Ecuador. Yeah, this is in the early 90s. And Ecuador ultimately dinged them for $18 billion, which is reduced on appeal to $9 billion. And it was not a number randomly picked. They went over the tremendous amount of acreage, the damage, and the cost of repairing the damages that had been done. Chevron promptly abandoned the entire country. They did not want to have any assets there that could be seized. And they attacked Donziger in every possible way. They disbarred him. He's now a prisoner in his own house with ankle bracelets on. He's being charged with criminal contempt by a judge was a complete worshiper of Chevron, who said that they provide us with liquids and lubricants that everyone uses every day. He has tried to demonize Doninger. He's now being tried for criminal contempt. They've never tried him with anything that would give him a jury trial. He's now being accused of being mean in court, and so they've made that into a criminal contempt case.
Because he would not hand over his laptop.
Well, they want his cell phone, too. They want his cell phone and laptop under the guise of getting, they want the addresses of everyone he ever interviewed for any purpose, or that any of his assistants interviewed in Ecuador. It's a complete full court press. It's chased away a couple of really great law firms who freely said, we can't deal with this.
There are hundreds of hours. I mean, the legal team on behalf of Chevron is pretty staggering. So clearly they see a lot is at stake here, and they've spent apparently staggering sums to bring down Doninger. And so it's a very, very big Goliath against David here. What's at stake? On the face of it, it just seems so horrific that they would spend so much money to bring this guy down, who has an international reputation that's pretty sterling and has mounted a defense with the help of a lot of pro bono lawyers around the world, as well as Lauren Regan here in Eugene, who's been on the Left and the Law, who's his attorney now in this trial that's been delayed till January. What do you think the aim is for Chevron and the courts?
Well, only 20 companies are responsible for a third of the greenhouse gases emitted in the modern era. Chevron is number two, right behind Saudi Arabia's Aramco. What's at stake is the cost of doing business, externalities. These companies are used to having communities pick up the check and the tab and the pain of the work that they do in order to extract oil. What's happened in Ecuador is that they were held responsible for those externalities or additional costs as a result of their work. You might have noticed that alternate energy forms are gaining rapidly in every way. They're getting cheaper with time goes by. They're getting, the methods of distribution are improving. They are being threatened, they being Chevron, by the rise of alternate forms of energy. If they are made responsible for the impact of their work, that's going to just shred their competitiveness in all sorts of different ways. They view this as dire threat to the whole way of doing business that has created them in the first place. They've hired no less than like 60 law firms to take on Doninger and a handful of other people over the past 20 years. They see it as literally a matter of life or death. And that's why they're fighting the way they are.
Yeah. So we will continue to follow this case. And we're very proud of Lauren Regan and the Civil Liberties Defense Center in Eugene for their work and joining this case of defending him. So there's some bright spots in the sky after the election, but there are a lot of big black holes out there.
There are indeed.
Yeah.
Smelly ones. Dirty.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Mike. This is Jan Hocken and Mike Snedeker with our post-election review and discussion of the incredible case and heroic work of attorney Stephen Doninger.
Time and an aggressive time, a painful time, a time where cynicism rots the vine, and a time where violence blocks the summer shine. Lifetimes go by in a flash, in a search for love, in a search for cash. Everybody wanna be some fat tycoon, everybody wanna be on a tropic honeymoon. Nobody wanna sing a little bit out of tune, or be the backbone of a rebel platoon. It's too soon to step out of line. You might get laughed at, you might get fined, but do you fear me when I say I feel pain every day when I see the way my friends gotta slay and never get ahead of it? they gotta pay. No way, no way. Some make a living doing killing, Colombian penicillin. Some are willing to play the villain, they just chilling. To pass the time, pass the information, or pass the wine. Pass the buck or pass the baton, but you can't pass the police or the Pentagon. The IRS or the upper echelon. I think it's time to make a move on the contradiction. Bomb, bomb. Rock the nation. Take over television and radio station. Bomb, bomb. The truth shall come. Give the corporations a complication. Bomb, bomb. Rock the nation. Take over television and radio station. Bomb, bomb. The truth shall come.